Welcome to the Screamcast episode 90. I am Sean DeRager. With me, as always, is Brad Henderson. BJ may be joining us or may not. We're recording pretty late, and she disappeared. So
let's just hope she's okay.
I'm pretty sure she found a nice comfy pillow, and I'm sure she's totally fine.
What we actually go through to bring this show together.
What do we go through on a weekly basis?
Yeah.
It's three of us trying to work our schedules.
I mean, we've always talked about that before, but like, you know, it's a chore in itself, just
it's
setting
ridiculous.
This stuff up. And then when we get guests and stuff, it's like Sean and I text back and forth for like an hour saying, hey, can you do this, this, and this? Can you do these dates? No, I can only do this and this. Then I have to email the guest and be like, hey, can you do this or this?
Yeah.
No, I can do this. And it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and there's the whole time zone. I'm on the West Coast. You guys are on pretty much East Coast time zone. So it really makes it hard because
– and then if we have a guest that's overseas, we are fucked.
But then we're both fucked. So we're equally fucked on that. But but yeah, you know, it's you know, hey, I think we make it work for what it is, and
hey man, it's a lot of fun.
You know, if we were all in the same time zone, it'd be a hell of a lot easier. Because the easiest time for me is either before my kids wake up, which is like at 5 a.m, or after they go to bed.
We used to do it really early.
Yeah, because that was
morning. That was kind of how when I was doing the screencast facts that one day of all the crazy
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, that was a good
that
stuff.
If we could go on and on, like I should have kept doing that. You know, periodically, like every week, do like 10 screencast facts.
Yeah.
But anyways, if anybody wants to know, the Graydon Clark episode was the episode that I recorded entirely in the bathroom.
That's right, the Graydon Clark.
Yeah, man, because I got home and then we sat down and it was like my stomach would just started killing me. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, you know, I can't, you know, obviously reschedule this because we're just about to record.
It's Graydon Clark, man. It's like...
So I just had that mute button, like, on standby.
God bless that mute button. This is why, because people ask us, why don't you do the podcast live, you know, through, I guess, Periscope or whatever, or Google Hangouts. It's just like, there's so much going on. God bless that mute button. Especially if I'm here, and of course, my 3-year-old has interrupted the show enough.
Yeah.
You know,
it's different, like, if we actually... you know, had maybe a job out of it where we met someplace and we record. I mean, like Killer POV hasn't made. I mean, they all meet, you know, in an office and they have their guests, which is great. I mean, it sounds great. They do a great job.
We're not jealous of those bastards.
We're not jealous of that at all. But, you know, it's like with us, I mean, we wing every episode. I mean, it's coordinated a tiny bit, but man, we wing the fuck out.
But I feel like I operate best in a certain winging concept. Like if it's too
our
scripted,
best episodes are the ones that are like right, like you know, maybe just scheduled like a day out.
Yeah. Hey, and Sean, tomorrow we're interviewing so and so. Can you do that? Who? What? Where? When?
Yeah. And then we just do it, and it actually ends up working a lot better than. When we have something scheduled for like a month and we have questions.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of scripts.
We do not write down questions and we usually tell the guest what we're doing right before we record.
Yes. Yep.
But it always works out. I think it's more comfortable that way. Cause if you give like the fucking itinerary to somebody, like, I don't know, man. Like, it's just, we're not face-to-face, so it's a lot harder.
Yeah.
You know, especially if we don't meet these people. Again, with, like, Killer PV is really awesome because they get to meet before, they get to chat, you know, that's really cool. You know, with us, I mean, we've never met these people before. So,
I've never met you in person.
No, and that's another screencast fact, you know? But, I mean, it's usually, you know... fucking Facebook message somebody, get a contact through like an email He'd be like, hey, you want to be on this show? Who is this? It's like, hey, here's like some past episodes of these guests. This is how it rolls. Yeah. Oh, cool. Sure.
Yep. So, you know, hey, it's worked out so far. We're 10 away from 100, man.
That's ridiculous. Next month is our 2-year anniversary.
Holy shit. Yeah, next month.
Isn't too bad because that means we've only missed 14 episodes.
Yeah.
No, because when we get, I think February, the end of February was our first episode.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that we've only missed like under, you know, probably maybe around 10 episodes total.
Yeah.
We've skipped out on, which is only 10 weeks, which isn't bad.
It's not bad at all.
2 years and, you know, it's all five the shit a year. We got going on.
And I think it's fitting. February, we are going to do 4 heavy metal horror episodes, which is kind of fitting because that's kind of how you and I bonded online, I think, was when you started posting heavy metal horror stuff. I was like, you know, I was like, right on, because I hadn't really, you know, been exposed to heavy metal horror. But, dude, I'm a huge 80s metal fan. And it was just like these are movies I couldn't believe were movies that had eluded me. So I had a huge fun time talking about it with you, and you gave me a bunch of pointers and movies to check out, and you got me going down the path of heavy metal horror. So that's kind of how we bonded. We bonded over music as well.
Yep.
So
there we go.
Internet's a weird place, everybody. You can bond with a perfect stranger.
That's how you meet a lot of friends. Yeah, I mean, that's, dude, I met BJ on the internet, and then, you know, when I was in Ohio with Janice, you know, I was like, hey, come up to see you, because it's only like an hour away from where my, you know, grandparents are.
Yep.
You know, and that was really cool. And one day, you know, we'll meet too. And
someday. We'll it will happen.
Warm embrace.
Oh, man. It's going to be awesome.
Well, however, our first episode for Heavy Metal Horror, though, will be John Michael Thor.
Fuck yes.
I'm doing heavy metal, like, little things.
Yep. We will give you an itinerary of what you should be watching before next week's episode later on. We got some stuff to jump into here, but first, I wanted to talk about a couple things, Brad. Gareth Evans hasn't really given us anything for a couple years. He's done the Raid Redemption and then the Raid 2, but hasn't really...
You just call it the Raid Redemption.
It's written right in front of me. The Raid. I don't know why that colon redemption showed up. Marketing bullshit, I guess. But anyway, unleashed...
When they released the sequel, they didn't do that. Like
the Raid 2, Redemption again!
I was looking for like maybe some kind of subtitle.
Yeah, that subtitle makes no goddamn sense at all.
But, oh well.
Anyway, but he hasn't really given us anything in the past couple years, and he, I guess, got bored and decided to do a short samurai action film, or action scene, basically. And apparently, based on his Twitter, this was something that he wanted, and it was like an exercise in bloodless action, because I think he's wanting to stretch his legs, and he's known for the super gory stuff, but he was wanting to try
to
do something.
Did he do it for his kid, too, or something?
He wanted to do something that his kids could watch. I have a feeling he either has some projects down the line that are to be, you know, better marketable, or to be marketed better. The restrictions will be probably PG-13, so I think it's an exercise for that. You never know exactly what they're doing these for, because he's not just doing this just for shits and giggles. There's something, there are future projects he is planning for by doing this stuff. I mean, me,
it's
also
to see the reception.
Totally. I mean, I would love to see him do a samurai flick, and I would, if it's as tense and awesome. Some people beg to differ, apparently. Of course, those people always show up. But if it says, I mean, I thought it was super tense. It was just fantastic choreography. And I didn't care that there wasn't blood splurting, because I was totally invested in what was going on in front of me. And I don't know, man. It was an awesome little exercise that he put out there. And the reception, I think, has been pretty great. But,
yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's kind of the same thing, like, you know, comparable to like even Jason Eisner, who you know, he throws some shorts every once in a while just out there, and then he has like those stunt videos and music videos that he puts out, you know, so he's like always working. Yeah. You know, a completely different caliber of filmmaker. But,
yeah. Well,
know.
it's all preparing for the next thing. And even if he doesn't do a samurai flick, it's all this stuff means something. As a creative person, as somebody who's filming a filmmaker, you kind of have to do this. You need to keep your tools sharp, you know? And so, yeah, man, I mean, I think we're due for a modern samurai flick myself. 'Cause there really hasn't been too much. I mean, that's, it's always like some white dude in ninja clothes, you know?
Yeah, I know, but we had
like samurai.
You know, we had 13 Assassins.
Yeah, but it's been a while since 13
and
Assassins.
And we had, 2013 and 2014, we had Miike's remake of Harakiri, and we had, which is really good, and it's bloodless, basically, which is kind of neat that they went that route. God, what is his other movie that he just did? Shit, I gotta look it up. You talk.
I just think, you know, on the caliber of like 13 Warriors, was it not 13 Warriors? Jesus Christ.
13 Assassins is
13
nuts,
Assassins. That's fantastic. 13 Warriors is that, Antonio Banderas flick, isn't it?
No, it's the 13th Warrior.
13th Warrior. I'm all screwed up. I can't think. I would love to see. I mean, I just want to see something new from Gareth Evans, and I think he has something up his sleeve. I feel like he's getting ready for something, but we don't know yet exactly.
Yeah.
I want to move on to other things. Do you have that up?
Yep. I don't know what I'm talking about, so let's move on. I thought he had something else, but
Harakiri was
2011.
We're due for in the style of like, you know, Seven Samurai or anything. I just got a couple Criterion Samurai flicks in the mail. I don't see them right now. But we're due for some modern epic samurai flicks, I think. We don't get enough
then
of those.
Then you need to check out Samurai Fiction.
Okay.
Yeah, Samurai Fiction is probably one of the best modern, and it's black and white too. Black and white samurai flicks. It's a different, you know, it's, you know, has some comedy based with it, but, it's really, really good. And then they did a spinoff a couple years later called Red Shadow. That's based on one of the ninjas that's in the film. It's samurais, but they also have ninjas that roam, you know, that like are in the trees that watch over the samurais and stuff. And then, you know, shoot down poison darts if someone tries to sneak up behind them. And so they like did a spinoff of one of those ninjas that's in the film called Red Shadow. That's, you know, really fucking funny and good. It's just really, it's really out there. And also, if you watch it, you will, or if you look up the cover, you will see where the legendary scene in the House of Blue Leaves in Kill Bill, when everything turns blue.
Mm-hmm.
It's an obvious homage, or people say ripoff, whatever. Obvious homage to Samurai Fiction. It's set in Samurai Fiction. It's red.
Huh.
You know. Cool. And that's even in the cover of the poster. But anyways, definitely check them out. They're really, really, really good.
Very nice. Next thing I want to talk about real quick was John Portanova's Valley of the Sasquatch is being sold overseas. Yeah. They got what was the name of the company that's doing their it's on the tip of my tongue. I had it right here.
I thought you just said you made notes and you wrote shit down.
I got it right here.
Were you lying?
No.
Oh.
DevilWorks is a company.
DevilWorks, that's what
that
it is.
That is basically, I think, trying to sell it overseas. So I'm not sure what's happening in the States here as far as that film being sold, but they got a new poster. So this DevilWorks worked up a new poster, which I think is super strong. I think it works better than the previous poster. And that trailer, man, I think is this the first trailer that we've actually seen?
Yeah, I think this is the first trailer
it's a
release.
Badass trailer.
What was that? I've heard stories of strange things being seen in the woods.
We We gotta stay alert tonight.
Hey, man, it's a good trailer. It's, you know, and, well, I guess I've seen the film.
Yeah.
I could say that, right?
You must have been playing festivals, man. Of course you've seen the fucking film.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's played at festivals, yeah. I was thinking, like, I don't know why I was thinking that.
What I want to know is, they do show a lot of Sasquatch in the trailer.
You see a good amount of Sasquatch throughout the film.
Awesome. That's all I want to know. And that's great. Cause a lot of times we see these trailers, you see them, they spoil the monster, show the monster in the trailer, and then you don't see it. You know, you barely see it throughout the film.
Yeah.
That's great. But it looks badass. I think I was surprised at how solid it looks. Like the cinematography looks great. The acting, I mean, this is going to be a strong, I think. Is this Sean's first feature,
right?
Yeah,
this is his directorial debut.
I think it'll be a strong debut for him, man. I'm super excited for it. So yeah. Keep this on your radar.
It's good, too. Yeah, I'm excited to see because, you know, I've always been a Bigfoot fan, and John is, like, you know, I think...
Well, he did his research for this thing.
Well, I think he would fuck Bigfoot if he had a chance. But... you know, he's very passionate about, like, aliens and you know, Bigfoot. He just likes, you know, monsters, and he is obsessed with, like, X-Files and Unsolved Mysteries. So when I heard he was doing it, you know, I was like, man, this is totally, like, you know, your thing. Like, this is going to be super cool. And, you know, I went through a period where it felt like I was watching a Sasquatch movie every week, you know.
Yeah, yeah, like, they were in the dollar VOD area.
Yeah, like I was getting VOD movie, you know, I was getting stuff in the mail, and I was like, what the fuck? And like, I felt like I watched like 6 or 7 Bigfoot movies like last year. And so when he was saying he was doing one, I was like, shit, man, that's like, I don't know if people are going to be interested because they're so like burnt out on these fucking awful, you know, Bigfoot movies.
Which is why I think it's smart that they're, you know, I feel like they're kind of taking their time
like
with this.
I didn't exist all that much. You know, I was really excited about Exists because I like that director. I really like Lovely Molly. I love the Blair Witch Project. But I just wasn't into Exists all that much. And then, you know, that's a film that you actually see Bigfoot quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, the camera is always pointed down at the ground.
Yeah, I like that this is a static, classic static camera
right.
film. Yeah. That's fantastic.
So if this, there's, you know... There's, you can tell the love for Bigfoot too, because there's references to, you know, the old, you know, documentation. I had just the name slipped my head.
Boggy Creek?
No. Well, I mean, I don't know if there's reference to Boggy Creek, but there's multiple references to, man, the guy that fucking captured Bigfoot, like the best video of Bigfoot.
Right.
What the fuck is that? Anyways,
it escapes me.
You know, but he just, you could tell like how passionate he is, and I don't know. It's just really cool to see someone that, you know, can make something that they love. You know, kind of in that sense of, you know, that I almost said extraterrestrial, but unless you're talking about Bigfoot Lost Coast tapes, Bigfoot aliens blended together. But I don't know. It's just really cool to see someone that's so passionate. Doesn't like see that niche and is like, oh yeah, let's make a movie about Bigfoot because I read that people like that.
Yeah.
No, it's like someone that's genuinely kind of like obsessed with Bigfoot and loves Bigfoot making a movie.
Yeah.
Like that. And I think that's cool.
I'm excited for it. I can't wait to watch it. I need to, I would love to hear at least get a release date set, you know, and actually know when to expect it. But I'm glad. I feel like they're doing it right. They're taking their time. It's gone to so many festivals, and it's gotten so much acclaim from all these festivals, and it's just been really cool to kind of track this film because we've known about it for a couple years now, and it's just awesome seeing the fruition. And like I said, like that was the first footage that I had seen. And I'm really fucking impressed, man. Like, I'm really excited for this now. Because at first, you know, you kind of know someone who's doing a film, and you hope that it looks good, and there's always that moment that sometimes, you know, if you know somebody who's making a film that maybe doesn't look as good and you're just trying to be supportive, like, I'm genuinely straight up excited for this flick and I'm going to pimp the shit out of it. So
yeah, and we'll keep talking about it because, I mean, it you know, talking about a film that doesn't, you know, even have a word of distribution yet, people are going to forget about it.
Yeah.
But we'll keep talking about it. I mean, John's been on the show twice. I'm sure we'll have him on again at some point promoting the film when it's
totally
when it's available. That's the name, the Patterson video.
Okay. Yeah,
it's like
the
old, like, grainy, like, 8mm footage that he filmed in the woods. You know, there's a couple references to that, which is, you know, pretty cool.
Great. All right, and finally, before we get to what's on your doorstep here, the X-Files is back, man. Did you catch any X-Files episodes yet? The new season 10?
Dude, no, I've never watched X-Files.
Oh shit, you're working through the X-Files right now.
Right.
Now, you're going to have to, because they bring you up to speed on episode 1 here of season 10. But I think if you give it the time and watch, you know, all 9 seasons.
Yeah, no, it was just something that I've never, like, it's always intrigued me, and I know it's 100% right up my alley.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was something I was just too young to start television with and then just never kind of got into it.
X-Files is weird because there are the Monster of the Week episodes, which are always, for the X-Files, my favorite ones. Like, there's one called Squeeze, and that's the one that freaked the hell out of my daughter, but it's called Squeeze. And it's about this guy that squeezes through air vents to kill people and eat their livers. Stretch. That's it. Stretch.
Called Stretch.
And, hey, BG's online. Let's try to bring her on.
Yeah. Do it mid-show so we can record it. No, I just actually finished, I think, episode 6 of the first season. So I'm slowly going to work myself through it. But, yeah, man, I'm, like, completely hooked.
Awesome.
Hey, BJ.
BJ's in the house.
God. I am like the most old man that's ever lived.
Well, you didn't have to, you know, re-wake up to join us, but we're glad to have you. We haven't even got to what's on your doorstep yet.
We're mid-episode.
We're actually talking X-Files. Have you seen the new X-Files episodes?
I have, and I'm not supposed to have because I watched it without Zach, and he's going to be really upset when he's listening to this. And it's like,
shush.
You watched it.
No, you didn't. No, she didn't. She's she's kind of still tired and making stuff up, Zach.
I'm just delusional.
But no, I think you know, people, of course, like to shit on new stuff, apparently. But if you've
the thing to do now,
I guess. If you've watched seasons 1 through 9, seasons 8 and 9 were the rough patch of X-Files. Like, I've only seen I haven't seen episode 2 yet because I haven't had time for season 10, but the first episode, yeah, it was a little bit of exposition dump to get everyone caught up, but I'm fucking pumped, man. Like, I'm so excited to have X-Files back, and it felt like an X-Files episode. I don't know what people are complaining about.
Well, I think it's one of the most, you know, being a fresh, you know, kind of non-biased person coming in, because like I said, I've never seen an episode other than, you know, what I just started last week. Like, I literally have never seen a fragment of X-Files. And going in, I think if you took all the X-Files out and just made it about kind of the relationship and chemistry between, you know, Scully and Mulder, like, that's the show right there.
Yeah.
Like, them just interacting with one another is fucking great.
Yeah, it's great to have them back. They haven't missed a step with their chemistry. So I'm excited to see where it goes. And it's like, people, this is 6 episodes. This is a 6 episode arc. I'm sure they're going to have some Monster of the Week type stories, but it's like, I don't understand why everyone puts so much on the first episode to a TV show.
Probably because they're just expecting a lot more.
That's the problem. Everyone needs to just chill the fuck out. But
yeah, I think everyone's kind of forgotten that some of the beauty of the X-Files is that it wasn't like, you know, crazy in your face alien show. Yeah. Like, it just wasn't. It was a little bit more subdued than that, and that's why it was kind of so cool, and they're still following that formula, but I think we're so conditioned now that there is such an abundance of genre television between The Walking Dead and Hannibal and, you know, what have you. I think people are accustomed to seeing a lot more all the time. So now we're getting this kind of ease back into something that's popular, and we're like, well, what do you mean there's a crazy exploding alien right. every 30 seconds?
I mean, it feels like the show's never left. Like, it's, I mean, yeah, like I said, 8 and 9 weren't that great, but it just, it feels like they're just dropping right. Well, hey, we got a new X-Files season. Here we go. And it's just great to have it back. So I'm excited to watch it, and I don't know. But a lot of meh, and it's okay, and blah, blah, on the internet. Internet these days is pissing me off, people.
I will tell you this, man. I was super excited for Arrested Development last season 4. And I got about, I think, an episode or two episodes in, and I said no. And when Wet Hot American Summer announced their thing, I was super excited about that. And I got about two or three episodes in. That was only like 6 episodes too, and I gave up.
What? My wife and I watched it. We laughed. It got dumb, but we laughed.
It gets real nuts and weird, and I love it.
I don't even think I smiled.
Well, you hate comedy, so
you apparently not.
You have a black little black nugget of coal.
Oh, that's racist.
What? All right. I meant black is
weird.
Burnt and shriveled.
Wow.
All right. real quick, I'm going to put this in the show notes, but there's an app called Jog, J-O-G-G, and I put a video thing up that it's a cool little app, or you can use the website, where someone places a question, video question out, and you guys can reply by clicking reply. You have to sign up for an account, but you can a video reply back, and I put one up there. It'll be in the show notes. For next week's show, as we dive into heavy metal horror, we want to know what your guys' favorite heavy metal horror flick is, and briefly why, like a sentence, why it's your favorite. And it'd be fun to have a collection of those, kind of play on the first this first heavy metal horror episode. So check that out. Leave some video replies, and it could be fun. I like this is a kind of a cool little tool that I hope will enhance the show. So we'll see how it goes. It could bomb, but. That's out
love
there.
The show.
we are going to be talking about of Unknown Origin and Dominion today, because we didn't get to those last week because we ran out of time. So we'll get to those in just a minute. But first, let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow! I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
Okay.
All right. Brad, are you going to go first this time?
No.
I went first last time. I can go first again. I don't care.
I can go first because I have, like, nothing. you hang up first. That's what this is turning into right now.
Is that it?
We need to draw names out of a hat before we record.
All right.
How about out of Fedora?
All right. Yeah, shut up. Fuck you, Brad. I'll go ahead and go. Is it BJ, you have nothing?
I have two of them.
Two, okay, let's go. Let's hear them.
Wait, what is the rubbing sound? I'm hearing something.
The rubbing sound?
BJ's rubbing the microphone against her mouth.
I'm not. Oh.
Okay.
You would know. no, I don't know. I don't know what sound you're hearing. But regardless, I only have two. You're both perverted. I should have stayed asleep. So the first one was I finally caught... something that I had watched when it was kind of in its festival run. I got to watch like a press screening from it, but it, you know, was kind of watermarked and it definitely took me out of it, especially for this film. So I finally got to watch One Animal's Dream, which.
Well, shit. Yeah. I saw that at Fantastic Fest, like 2014 or something.
Yeah. Like I had seen it when it was first doing its festival run, but I kind of forgot about it because I don't know why, but the first time I saw it, it just didn't pull me. And it has everything that I like. I mean, it's very atmospheric. It feels very kind of cold. It's foreign, and it deals with the parallels between, you know, werewolf transformations and women going through puberty, which is a oddly specific subgenre that we have a lot of films about, and I love pretty much all of them. Kind of that, you know, Ginger Snaps feeling of, oh, I've started my period and I'm also a werewolf. So you'd think that I'd be super, super into it, and when I first saw it, I really wasn't. Rewatching it, no watermark, being able to put it on my television with the surround sound, made a world of difference because this film is very atmospheric and you need to kind of let yourself be surrounded by it to really kind of appreciate the beauty of it. It is real slow. So if you...
I saw it at midnight.
Oh, it is not a midnight film. Yeah, oh, dear God.
And I was like, I liked what I saw, but then when it came out on VOD, I was like, oh shit, that's that fucking kind of cool-ass werewolf movie that I caught glimpses of because I kept dozing off. Like, I normally don't fall asleep in movies, but this is it's really, really good. However, it's just very slow. Like, it's coming a coming-of-age and character-building movie, and, you know, when shit kind of does hit the fan, I was asleep.
What's the name of that? Like,
When Animals Dream.
Okay.
The closest thing that I can compare it to, and I know that it gets this comparison a lot, but you know, it kind of makes sense. It is very Let the Right One In, the vein of it is. I mean, they're very different films. I think they cover two very different parts of your life with adolescence. But if you like Let the Right One In and like you're cool with that type of movie, then you're going to be cool with this. But if you're expecting something like Ginger Snaps where it's kind of snarky and a little bit quicker, you're not getting that. So that's good to keep in mind. But, I think it's on Netflix. That's where I think it's on
Netflix now. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it's anywhere else, but it is really good. Yeah, it is really good. You should definitely check it out. So there's that. And then the other thing that I watched this week is a lot of the Cleveland filmmakers have it's primarily like so Zach and I with Turnstile and with Sickening Pictures and then our friends over at Turnstile Films and like some of our actor friends have decided that once a month we are going to be doing a Criterion night where one household will, you know, pick a Criterion movie that they love, that they think, you know, yeah, this absolutely is a classic. This is something that should be, you know, seen by everybody because of, you know, this reason. It's kind of a way for us to, you know, look at, you know, some films that we either have forgotten about or films that we would never really seek out. Or, you know, films that inspire us that we never would have thought. So last week was the first edition, and we decided to keep it, you know, we're not doing any deep cuts on the first week. So we watched The Game with Michael Douglas and Sean Penn, which I don't know why this movie hasn't made a resurgence.
I love it.
Because it is a giant fucking episode of Black Mirror. Like, it is Black Mirror before Black Mirror. But the whole time I'm watching it, which I had seen it before, but I don't remember when I had seen it, which is, I don't know, over the years when I've watched as many movies as I have, especially ones that I probably should not have watched at young ages, I don't remember ever seeing this movie, but as the movie was going on, I completely remembered everything that was happening. So I have seen it at some point. But I was watching it and I was like, holy shit, this is, you know, exactly like that, you know, Black Mirror episode, White Bear. It's like, no, like this is totally the source material for that episode. So it's just weird to me that when Black Mirror came out and everyone just kept saying, oh, there's nothing like it, there's nothing like it. It's like, but there is. And this is definitely it. The Criterion transfer remastering that they did to it is gorgeous. Sometimes I get a little scoffy at Criterion. I'm like, it doesn't fucking matter. It's who cares? Just, you know, watch whatever movie it is. But it looks really, really nice on Blu-ray. Michael Douglas looks crisp as hell. And if you can make him look crisp, then your editor is doing something well. So he's great in it. And then, it's definitely a movie I recommend, but it was cool. I can see why it has a Criterion, why it's been deemed worthy by, you know, the Criterion Academy.
That should be your real thing is, deciding if it's worthy for Criterion, because Criterion does kind of the same thing that everybody else does, is they just get basically buy out 10 movies and, you know, they just release it under their label. You know,
which is so weird to me is that they have this kind of air about them that they're, you know, exclusive and, you know, they're the best of the best and you have to be deemed worthy to be a part of them. But you're
making
right,
me rebuy Wes Anderson flicks. I don't understand.
Right, but, like, they're doing the exact same thing that everybody else does. They're just
no, Wes Anderson
titles.
Has a deal with Criterion that they're automatically released under that label.
But they come out on the whoever releases the movie first in theaters, it comes out on their label first, and then a year later out on Criterion. Really odd.
Right, but the physical media rights are always Criterion.
No, I'm saying they come out on Blu-ray. I have Moonrise Kingdom already. I bought it for, like, $5. And then, for like 2 weeks, or like a month later, it was out on Criterion for like $30. So I was like,
well,
I got the movie.
It's just one of those weird things. Because, I mean, I've seen some Criterion films that are just really, like, just B-movie trash. But it's one of those things that there's, like, you try – I think it's just like – I think they kind of started out that way. But, I mean, we also have a company that, I mean, visually the movies are stunning, but they also released The Rock and Armageddon.
Right. And we need to stop being so precious with shit like that. I mean, Armageddon is pretty legit, but I'm not looking at that and saying that it's, you know, going to be carrying the same amount of weight as some, like, I don't know, some artsy 1920s French whatever the fuck movie. See,
and I don't buy those at all.
Right, but, like, you're not the audience for that. That's totally fine.
I know, I'm watching once and fall asleep.
But you don't have to be the audience for that, but I'm just kind of sick of kind of that entitled mentality of, like, oh, if Criterion didn't release it, it can't be any good. I'm like, eat a dick, man. If it's a good movie, it's a good movie. It doesn't matter who
released
it.
Right, yeah, there's this misconception that everything that they release is, like, the best of the best. And it's not. It's just a fucking ordinary movie. If you took some of the Arrow titles and you put them under Criterion, then they would be worshiping and praising them. And it's like, no, it's the same fucking movie. It's just one label got it before the other.
Yeah, I want to see Criterion. Exactly. I want to see a Criterion presentation of Caligula. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, like if they released Caligula or they released – what was that one – like the Dr. Jekyll and Mrs. Osborne the Grand Buffet or Cemetery Without Crosses. If they released any of those – or Day of Anger, they released any of those, it would be put on a higher pedestal. And that's not how it is. It's just another label. It's just they kind of curate theirs a little bit more.
Yeah. But they do some really good restoration. I mean, they keep everything very.
Yeah, they do a great job. Their final product is amazing.
Yeah.
But the selection process isn't some crazy like, there's no fucking crazy prestigious academy for Criterion that people seem to think that there is. It's just a fucking company acquiring
they're wheeling and dealing just like all the other companies. I guarantee you they're bidding on all the same movies that all these other ones are, and especially, you know, some of these horror titles. And I always get excited when they finally get a horror title every now and then, you know, like, so, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I think buy the movies you like, you know what I mean? There's a whole bunch of stuff on Criterion that I don't buy because I'm like, I would never watch that, you know. For a while, I almost got sucked in, though. I almost did.
What's one that you bought?
Dude, I don't know. They're all... I have a whole Criterion stack in the other room. I haven't even looked at it. Like, you know, there's a handful in there that are, I'm like, I want to watch, but you know, I need to be in the right mood to watch some, you know, French new wave, whatever.
Truth. Yeah, that was something on my doorstep.
Cool.
So
I will rattle through mine. I got to the movie Everest, which I was kind of hoping would be, you know, a little more, I guess, exciting than what actually it was. It turns out when you're freezing, you can't do a whole hell of a lot. So when all the shit goes down, which is pretty intense when things go down, I kind of respect it for that. And it's almost like maybe I haven't seen The Revenant, but everyone's complaining that all Leonardo DiCaprio does is crawl through the snow and everything. If you're in sub-zero weather, you can't fucking move. So you end up crawling and moaning, and that's all you can do, or just laying there and hoping you survive. And that's pretty much what Everest is. It's kind of a standard disaster type film. It's based on a true story. A lot of huge actors are in it. I'm not going to go down the list, but there's some moments where if you blink or look away, all of a sudden one of those huge actors is gone, dead, just disappeared. Like, I didn't really enjoy it as much as I wanted to. It's a bleak film. But I kind of respect the fact that they just, when people die or whatever, it just happens. It's not theatrical at all. Like, it's pretty realistic in that sense. But sometimes realism doesn't make for a great film, if that makes sense, an entertaining film. So it's one of those I want to rewatch it to kind of see if there's anything under the surface. But it was okay, I have a feeling that if you saw this in 3D, you probably were, other than the gorgeous vistas of the mountain and the sunrise and the storm coming in, you're probably going to be pretty disappointed because, you know, a good half of the film takes place in a blizzard. So, but anyway.
You totally talked me out of seeing that movie.
Rent it.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing.
A little more, like, exciting as your seat, but if you think about it, it's in a real life situation like that, you know, it's not going to be, because the way weather comes in these freezing temperatures, the wind bites through you fast and you just can't move, and they're low on oxygen, you know, and that is a problem.
That's
so it's
true.
Like, it's realistic, but almost to his fault, you know. So, I mean, there's no Sylvester Stallone cliffhanger shit in this one.
Well, then I'm out.
But I do respect it as a film. So I would definitely say, and the problem with this was a ripe release where they could have put, because I guess there is a documentary about the expedition. If they would have included that documentary, it would have made this probably a little more of a great package, you know, but I would say rent it if you're interested. My daughter is actually learning about Everest and everything in school, and she's interested in watching it. So,
so traumatize her.
But that's the thing. Like, it's so realistic.
Show her alive. Show her alive. It's a lot.
Yeah. There's nothing as, it's not as good as alive, but, as far as like a historical type thing, you know, this would be something you can show in a classroom. If you're talking about this, it's pretty safe.
Gotcha.
Moving along, I watched M. Night Shyamalan's The Visit.
Yes.
And I kind of liked it.
It's okay to like it. Don't feel shame.
I love the twists and turns. And Brad said he saw the twist coming a mile away. I had totally forgot about any twist. Like, it's not necessarily, I guess kind of his twist, but there's a surprise. And it actually caught, I was like, oh shit, when when it happened. So, but I have a problem getting into the whole we're doing a documentary thing, especially with kids, because I'm like, there's no way this kid is, you know, put this all together after the after all the shit went down. There's no way she edited it down into an entertaining documentary.
Oh, but it's not that. There's no editing. There's no putting the thing together. They're not finding anything. It's not presented with credits.
Right.
You're seeing as it actually happens.
Okay.
Through there. Because
right. It's kind of like Chronicle, right? Chronicle did the same type of thing.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, they're not finding the footage from all those cameras or piecing it together. The cops aren't piecing footage together, unless it's actually stated this video was recovered. No, it's just a catalyst to actually tell like a story. It's just a different method of storytelling.
Yeah.
At this point.
But for what it was, once I got past that, I mean, I had to kind of force myself to get past that. But once I did, I mean, I think this is a return to form for M. Night Shyamalan. I mean, he's one of those directors that I've always kind of been rooting for and hoping he gets back to doing something at least that will kind of give me some goosebumps and shivers. And, you know, there's some scenes in this, man, that, you know, I was kind of closing my eyes and, you know, clenching my fist together. And I know for a fact, butt cheeks were clenched too, that if my kids watched this, they would definitely get scared shitless and in some moments. And I know that as far as like transitional horror goes, I think this is a, you know, going to be one of those films that they watch because their generation is used to talking to a video camera, watching other people talk to them at a video camera. They're in this YouTube generation. And because my son walked in as I was watching and he was like, "Oh, what are you watching?" And then he saw it was kind of maybe going to be scary and he kind of darted out of the room. But he saw that kids were making a film and that attracted him to it. So I think this is going to, I think this movie's going to hold up. I think especially for the younger generation, it's going to really, I think get a lot of kids into horror. And, you know, scary grandparents, man. There's, I don't know. I want to watch it again because, when I got done, I know that it was trying to hit some notes, like some sentimental notes with family and stuff. But I kind of missed that because I was just wrapped up in everything
it's
else.
It's like, but I think 20 times better the second time around.
Okay, because I know there's a lot more there. But yeah, I was genuinely surprised by it. I'm glad to see, you know, M. Night Shyamalan kind of tackle something smaller scale after his kind of playing with big budget stuff. And you know, I'm excited for what he's gonna do with Tales from the Crypt.
So you haven't addressed the unsung hero of
the kid
that
rapper
movie.
The rapping?
Yes.
God almighty. It was nine minutes in and this kid has rapped twice and I almost turned it off. I was like, I don't know if I can handle this kid.
Glorious. Because you wanna know what's gonna be funny? What like you're like, "Oh, I'm gonna turn this off." What's up, Noah, in like 7 years? Because that's
totally
every single kid.
Totally, I know, and you're right. I know. You're totally right.
So better get used to it and learn to embrace that shit.
I wasn't awkward and dumb at that age at all. No way. I was. I still am.
Jankos.
All right. Moving along here. Finally, is it the last thing I watched? Yeah. Henry Rollins, He Never Died.
Yeah. Sweet.
And I'm a huge, like, I knew that there was kind of a religious twist to this, and I don't think it's any spoiler that who he is, right? He's, because there's basically, what intrigued me about this film was there is this Jewish mythology about Cain, when he first he was the first murderer, right, in the Old Testament, or in the Jewish tradition, the Torah.
Yeah,
I can get nerdy religious people, so watch out. I've studied this crap. So he was the first murderer, and for him killing his brother Abel, God cursed him to walk the earth until for basically forever. And so when I found out that Henry Rollins is basically playing Cain in this wandering Jew mythos, and a friend of mine had been working on a script about the wandering Jew, about Cain. He even was doing a comic book and talking to movie studios about it. So I kind of wonder if some stuff got ripped off from him or inspired by, because he was going around all the studios shopping this shit. But all that's kind of below the surface. This works as more of a kind of revenge action, kind of not really action. There's our action beats to it. But it's about
more of a noir film.
Yeah, it's definitely more of a noir mystery. There's the underlying like supernatural element to his character,
and it's also super funny.
It's deadpan hilarious because this is basically an immortal person dealing with this bullshit again. You know, you can tell he's been through this bullshit for millennia, and nothing surprises him. It's almost like he wishes he was a few thousand years back, rather than dealing with all the modern bullshit. But it's great. Henry Rollins is pitch perfect. I loved him in this, and it's pretty cheap. I bought it on Vudu for like $9, $9.99.
I was just gonna ask, you know, where it's available.
Yeah, I think you can rent it as well. It's probably gonna show up on Netflix soon. With these types of movies, they always do. And I hadn't seen the Blu-ray around. I think it's out, but I saw it, and I'm starting to purchase stuff digitally now, which freaks me out a little bit. I bought two movies this week digitally, and
dun dun dun.
I Am Thor, and then He Never Died, and I'm kind of freaking out about it. I didn't buy the Blu-rays, but anyway, He Never Died. Fantastic movie. If you're going in expecting a balls to the wall just action flick, like, there's so much more to this movie than that. It is definitely, as Brad said, more of a noir, and just let the story unfold and give it a chance. And the last 20 minutes are just fantastic. And there's he has a moment at the end that I was just like, is probably my favorite part of the movie. It's great. Henry Rollins is great. I want more from this. Apparently, they're talking about possibly doing a TV show with this character and yep. Henry Rollins.
Nope.
No?
Yes.
Yeah?
No, don't just because someone likes something, don't make a TV show.
That's what Henry Rollins said in an interview. This was basically written as a pilot for a TV show, and it just
looks like it's a made for TV movie anyway. But, you know, it's a great movie. It's actually one of my favorites. I saw it at,
it's very low key. It's not like they really relied on a lot of cinematography. It's very, I can see that. It's very static.
Yeah. I mean, I saw it, South by Southwest last March, and, you know, it went over really well. I was surprised that I liked it as much because I kind of saw a clip of it and I was like, I don't know if I want to watch a direct-to-video looking Henry Rollins movie, but I was very impressed with it. Funny.
He elevates so much of the film. And
he does a really good job.
It's great. I mean, and it is very very funny in a subversive way.
Well, it's good that you bought it on Vudu because it looks like it's only getting a DVD release.
Huh.
February 2nd. So, okay.
Buy it in HDX. The worst cover I've
ever seen him alive.
Not a good cover.
No. When you look at it, it looks like he's just like it's going to fail because people are going to look at it and they're really like, "Oh, this is one of his like spoken word things." Because it looks like he's screaming. And
yeah, I don't understand the cover word. And then the wings. I don't understand the wings because Kane wasn't an angel. Although in the beginning when he has his shirt off, he looks like he did cut off wings. I don't know. There's a lot more going on there that, you know.
That's because religious iconography sells really, really well. So yeah, you don't have to know anything about it. They just see cut off.
Right. And they use a cross in the title. And Cain comes from the Old Testament. And the whole story, that whole thing is totally Jewish, 100%. So
yeah.
No cross at all. So, all right, moving on. In. Brad. Ooh.
I'm just got depressing stuff, so I'll start. I watched not a very good movie. I watched Olive released a Bela Lugosi film called Voodoo Man, where these couple of guys run this filling station. Whenever a young woman rolls through and she's by herself, they basically set up kind of a roadblock and kidnap her and take her to Bela Lugosi's character to kind of turn her into a zombie with like a ceremonial ritual, and he just kind of collects them. Of course, there is a screenwriter who's going to be writing a story about I'm not going to kind of go into detail about that because it kind of spoils a little bit. I was going to write a story about something, and his girlfriend is actually his girlfriend's sister gets actually kidnapped, and the hunt goes on. Very by the books, and it's kind of self-aware because they make a lot of monster references. There's even a reference in the movie where he's like, man, this would make a really good movie. You should have Bela Lugosi play the bad guy. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, that kind of ruins things. I don't know if it's just people really got a kick out of that back in the day. But just, I don't know. I find that kind of stuff, breaking that kind of fourth wall or whatever. Would that be considered breaking the fourth wall?
No, so that's not talking really directly to the audience, but still it's
very Batman in its style, though.
Yeah. So anyways, it's just, I don't know, with a lot of the older films, it's hard to build that suspense because we're so desensitized with the films of today. So watching something that is older, it has to be doing something fresh or new or have some kind of, something remarkable or, a story that hasn't been done. Look at the fucking Twilight Zone episodes. Jesus, like all the old Twilight Zone episodes are pretty fucking cool. Yeah. They're original. Like people got ideas for movies from them. And you would think that, I don't know, with all of that happening, watching older movies, it kind of sucks because it's like, oh, cool, zombies of women. Like, woohoo. So anyways, not a very good movie. And then
It's not a good movie.
Yeah.
I'll just go out and say it.
I just watched another one, another movie. This was actually not that bad because now this did something a little bit different. Scream Factory released The Brain That Wouldn't Die, which is actually an episode on Mystery Science Theater 3000, which they actually have the episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000 on the Blu-ray.
Wow.
But they actually did a new high-definition uncut transfer for this. Dude, there's like deleted scenes of boobies because apparently for foreign markets – they did scenes with kind of the same scenes over again, but the actresses were nude.
Huh.
Crazy, right? Well, however, I guess the audio was damaged, so they could only do the video. And it's also a separate, it's in the special features and everything like that. So kind of a really kind of unique story. There is a woman that is decapitated in an accident, and the head is taken, and she is being kept alive by a doctor who then tries to save her by getting a body for him to use the body, chop off the head, and then put her head on the body.
He knows that that works.
However, she starts developing there's like this mutated monster that actually lives in kind of the house where they are, and since she can't move, of course, she's just a head in a pan, she develops kind of this relationship with this mutant, and the story kind of goes from there. It's kind of batshit crazy. Like, I understand why it's a Mystery Science Theater 3000 because it's really fucking nuts. However, this is something that was, an older film, and this is like in the 60s, but completely like off the wall. And that's the cool thing. And one thing I never really liked about Mystery Science or whatever the fuck it's called, Mystery Science Theater 3000, is that they were making fun of the movies that were really trying to do something new and creative. Versus kind of like the really run-of-the-mill, by-the-book, black-and-white 70s movies that were, really trying to like turn it out and say, look, we're just going to do something fucking crazy. Like, these people obviously might have been on drugs making this movie. And I don't know. I kind of respect that. So watching it, you're not bored at all. You just can't believe what you're actually seeing. Is the movie good? Not really necessarily, but, you know, it's enjoyable to watch something this crazy from the 60s. Because if this came out today, we would be all over it. Be like, holy shit, this movie's fucking insane. But I don't know, with movies from the like the 40s, 50s, and 60s that did that, we just kind of shrug and be like, oh, you know, we just – those are goofy black and white movies. I think it's kind of unfair. I don't know. That's just my opinion. You guys aren't saying anything, so fuck you guys.
Listen. Nice.
Next up, I watched a movie called War Pigs. It is on the cover. It's Luke Goss, Dolph Lundgren, Chuck Liddell, Mickey Rourke.
Oh,
however,
Lord.
These guys really aren't in the. I mean, Dolph Lundgren and Luke Goss are in the film quite a bit. But kind of this is, hey, what if we kind of made the Sons of the Expendables movie? That's what it feels like. They just took a bunch of young kids. Noah Segan is one of the young kids. And they call themselves War Pigs because they like getting dirty. That's a quote in the movie. And basically Dolph Lundgren and Luke Goss train these kids to be, you know, better soldiers. That's pretty much it. It tries to do this Expendables thing. Like, because you have, like, Mickey Rourke coming in and organize and be like, hey, man. Dude, Mickey Rourke looks awful.
Dude, he was in that one movie I talked about. Oh, crap. He didn't show up to like, the last 10 minutes, and he's on the cover. Blunt Force Trauma. He looks so bad.
I had – well, because he was just in Iron Man whatever, 100
– Iron Man
2. Part 7.
Yeah, but afterwards he got some work done or something.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, he looked good for Mickey Rourke. I mean, because he, you know, he had the drug thing, and, you know, it just, I feel bad for him because he was always I thought he was a great actor.
He's amazing in that in The Wrestler.
Yeah, that's incredible. What I'm saying. Like, he had this comeback. He was this really good actor, you know, 80s and, you know, the 90s, and he kind of dropped out because, of course, everything that he was going through. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I honestly did not know it was him when he showed up on screen for a second. I looked and I was like, holy shit, that's Mickey Rourke. But like, they do that intro with kind of the bigger, you know, I mean, fucking Luke Goss was in like a Death Race movie. Chuck Liddell was, I think,
Death
in
Race
Expendables.
2 and 3.
Yeah. Chuck Liddell was in Expendables, right?
I don't fucking know.
The first one, whatever. I don't know. But it tries to set up that Expendables thing, but then they hand it off to a bunch of young kids, and the only notable one that I knew was Noah Segan, but even the general public's not going to know who Noah Segan is.
Yeah, he's that guy from Looper to the general public.
Yeah, if they remember that, you know? So
yeah,
you're
absolutely right.
And it was just like one of those things where they should have switched it around. They should have been like, these young kids aren't going to do this job. We got to go get these old dumb guys to do it. And then that.
So, Battleship?
Well, actually, Expendables, you know, you would have like kind of this. It's like a knockoff Expendables, but, you know, they literally are expendable because no one cares.
Do you remember what we were talking about on Twitter about being sprayed with the milk of a cash cow? That's what you watched.
Well, I'm about to talk about that movie that I saw 4 trailers of shark movies.
Oh, God.
I watched Jared Cohn's Little Dead Rotting Hood.
That sounds terrible, and I have no interest.
Man.
Starring Ouija's Bianca Santos.
Okay.
Bianca Santos. Like, they literally – they put – like, I was thinking about it today because I saw the cover and I was like, Ouija, like, what the fuck – what movie is that? And I was like, oh, shit. And I'll shit you not, I was looking through Vudu, and I have Ouija on Vudu, and Willow goes, let's watch that. I said, I think we watched it. She goes, oh, yeah. Did we? And I was like, that's sad. When you watch a movie and you have no recollection of anything that happened in the movie whatsoever. Like, I can't tell you one thing that happened in that movie other than Morgan Peter Brown is kind of like a counselor in it. That's it. And I think
that
hey,
there's some real whiny white people problems in that movie that you are missing out on.
So, anyways, Jared Cohn, if you don't know, he is Asylum's man for knockoffs. He made Atlantic Rim when Pacific Rim came out. He's made like a couple, you know, other knockoffs movies. You might, if you really follow us on Twitter, you would know he's the guy that was the actual, quote, director of Granny that Stephen C. Miller directed, that Jamie Kennedy did a Kickstarter for, took Stephen C. Miller's name off of the short and basically said Jared Cohn directed the short.
Wow.
And then Stephen C. Miller jumped in, and it was really, really funny how it all
tweet
unfolded.
Tweet with me like a man. good times, guys.
Text
me like a man.
Jamie Kennedy said to Stephen C. Miller, text me like a man. And then he called me a troll and told me to fuck off. Jamie Kennedy, that
good times, guys.
Classy. Classy.
So
Twitter.
I really wanted to see this movie because I don't know. Because if you look at the back of this looks like a sci-fi movie because of the glow.
What's this bullshit called?
It's called Little Dead Rotting Hood.
Oh, dear God.
And it's funny because I read the back and it's like an epic action thriller in vein of Underworld and Resident Evil. But it's there's no quote from anybody at the bottom. So Asylum made this up. I even searched for that quote.
Oh, it's made up for a quote. Someone in the office just said that. Yeah, it's like a cross between Underworld and whatever.
All I have a feeling is that a bunch of bros run Asylum. It's just a bunch of
probably.
It's just a bunch of bro dudes be like, you know, fuck San Andreas. Let's make San Andreas quake, bitch. You know that movie about
like
those robots, Pacific Rim? We're gonna put that shit in Atlantic, and it's gonna be Atlantic Rim. It's gonna fight in the ocean.
I think that it's all the dudes who try to come up with like the porn titles of their favorite movies. But then instead of making like the porn parody, they just make an actual parody and try to pass it off as a real movie.
Oh, they
shoot these in like a week,
dude.
That's being generous.
Little Dead Rotting Hood is.
What were they even trying to profit off of that Amanda Seyfried Red Riding Hood movie?
I don't know, but this just
is
came out.
Is that what they're trying to?
But this just came out. Usually their movies hit the shelf before the other ones come out in theaters.
They're just going after the Walmart crowd.
Yeah, because people are like, wait a second. I saw the trailer of this on TV. Let's get Atlantic Rim.
Yeah, people are stupid. That's like why the Ouija experiment went crazy on Netflix, because people are dumb.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it reminds me of that Eddie Murphy skit in Raw. When he's little and he wants to have a McDonald's hamburger.
His mom has to make it for him.
And his mom said, no, I'll make him a sandwich just like McDonald's. she's like, don't even have
Asylum's the soggy red ketchup bread of cinema. Is that what you're trying to say?
So they get the bread instead of the bun. They put onions. He's like, McDonald's don't put onions in their hamburgers. Well, this ain't McDonald's. This is my hamburger. That's what it feels like.
This is the best comparison to the Asylum.
And it's like I feel like that would be at the store. Like, you would take a little kid to the store, like, on the way there, it's like, Mom, I want to see Pacific Rim. No, it's going to cost $30. Let's get this for $5. It's Atlantic Rim. It's the same fucking movie.
Dude, I've been in a video
store. We're
going to
get Transmorphers from Redbox.
We're not going to spend $50 for Transformers. God. We're getting Transformers.
It's the same thing. I've actually been back in the rental days when you actually would go to a store to rent movies. I remember being in the store hearing these types of conversations with the parents and their kids, like, I vowed I would never be that parent.
Good, because like it's really, really ridiculous of kind of how this all unfolds, and I still do not understand it. I mean, Dude, they even did that knockoff of that Darren Lynn Bousman movie, didn't they?
The 13, 13, 13, or 11, 11, 11, or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to say they cranked out a couple of them. Like, they put out a couple that had the matching dates.
It's the same director, Jared Cohn.
Yeah.
Because he did 12, 12, 12, and 13, 13, 13.
Well, like, what the fuck? Is how do they get away with this when, you know, John Carpenter's winning lawsuits over Lockout, which, you know, is just far enough away that it's maybe not Escape from New York, but just close enough to where it totally is, and that's why they lost that lawsuit. But then things like the Asylum completely exist. Like, where does the Fair Trade or Parody Act, like, where are those limitations? Because I don't...
Because
if I was Transformers when Transmorphers came out, I'd be like, all right, you can suck my dick. I'm suing you for everything you're worth.
All right. I just want to go through a couple of these real quick just to make you all laugh.
Oh, my God. Okay.
All right. So when we had snakes on a plane, they had snakes on a train. When we had the Da Vinci Code, they had the Da Vinci Treasure. We had A Stranger Calls. They had When a Killer Calls. Like, what the fuck?
They did, like, a mock of a remake?
Dude.
That's some next-level shit.
Yeah, I know.
They did a World Trade Center movie called the 9/11 Commission Report.
Straight up. That's the 9/11 Commission Report.
And, of course, we know Transformers. But I think one of the other ones is Alien vs. Predator, AVP. They did AVH, Alien vs. Hunter.
Oh, my God.
But, like, you can just go down and you can see, like, it's even, like, the worst, like, Cloverfield. They had Monster.
Yeah.
Like... Like, what the fuck?
This is some off-brand Aldi cereal bullshit. This is not Cheerios, Mom. This is toasted oats.
But the thing is they really hit it big with Sharknado.
Oh, fuck.
And these guys are making who knows how much.
This is depressing me all of a sudden.
You know?
I'm all of a sudden insanely depressed.
Like... Like, what the fuck are we, like, it's like everybody's, like, in the wrong business because this is the cash cow, you know,
We got YouTubers making money, we got the Asylum making money, meanwhile, I don't know, I can't think of a good example, but really good movies are bombing, and, you know, podcasts aren't making shit. So, yeah, but, we're doing something wrong.
It's like, I don't know, it's like these movies are made for the first thing that comes to mind. Like, sitting in a room just joke, like, it's a joke. Like, even their originals, like, Two-Headed Shark Attack, man, that made a bunch of money. What should we do, make a three-headed shark attack? Well, yes, we should. I know you're joking around, but seriously, that's a really good idea, Jared.
And people eat it up.
I think what's so frustrating is that the Asylum is kind of taking that Roger Corman mentality of we have, like, a title and a poster before we have anything else, which, to some extent, I admire. But if it was all original content, I would be so much more behind it. But the Mockbuster thing just it feels so gross to me.
But it's the lowest common denominator, you know.
Right.
Whereas at least Corman he was knocking stuff off, and then he would give the idea to filmmakers, and they would run with it, and they would make a cheap, you know, film. But it's, I don't know, Corman had something that these don't have. There was still a tinge of originality, and filmmakers who actually were kind of giving a shit. Like, they were still kind of working hard.
Because there wasn't a sense of, like, hey, we're going into this knowing completely we're about to fuck you over. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, Asylum films, I watch them and I'm like, every single person involved in this is laughing at me right now. And it's like, you fucking idiot. You gave me your $12 for this piece of shit. You're an idiot. And they all know it. But I mean, at least the Asylum does one good thing in the sense that they just take the entire guest list of the history of TRL and then just puts it in like a hat and then pulls people out and calls them for work. So good for them.
I guess they're putting some people out of retirement. Work. Yeah.
All right. I got one. God. I got one. Ready? I'm gonna say the plot and then I'll say the title of the movie. When the magic mirror transports Snow White and Rumpelstiltskin from the kingdom to the modern day of Los Angeles, it's up to Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Rapunzel, and Red to follow them in order to stop Rumpelstiltskin from taking over both the real and fantasy worlds. The title is Avengers Grimm. Dude, they took two movies.
Oh my god.
They took two different stories and put them together. How crazy is that shit?
That's the next level shit right there.
What?
And the thing is, we're
who's
probably
in this?
Lou Ferrigno? And that's not a joke. Like, in the
is
sad
he
part,
Stiltskin or is he just
oh,
like,
please let him be Rumpelstiltskin.
No, Casper Van Dien is Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh, brilliant.
So we're not doing anything but other than talking listeners into watching these movies.
Oh,
well, we're going to skip the next terrible. Two. The real movies we're going to talk about today, we're going to skip them and just keep on going with this bullshit.
Can we put a pin in this and can we have a an Asylum episode where you just watch this shit?
No, Asylum Marathon.
We may have to do it.
I just realized something. Looking at this poster for Avengers Grimm, I actually saw this at Target. And I almost bought it, but I almost bought it because I'm a dick and because Adam Green's ex-wife is in it. And I wanted to see what has happened since she left him. And apparently she's doing an Asylum film. So I think he cut some dead weight there.
All right. So here's a really cool thing is that if you go to Wikipedia and look up the Asylum, they actually list the Asylum movies, but then they have the knockoffs next to them.
Yes.
That's so amazing.
Right. So, like, Asylum embraces this shit. Oh, like, they really, they have to. Do you think that's how they
avoid getting sued? Is that they're so upfront about what they're ripping off that it falls under parody?
It's got to be. They've found some loophole where they totally, yeah. Yep.
Oh my god, wait, one more, and I'm done, I promise.
Dear god, I'm going to blow my brains out right now.
When they did Death Race, they did Death Racers. But guess who's in it? Guess who's in it? Insane Clown Posse. I just looked at this. The top says Insane Clown Posse and WWE's The Raven in Death Racers.
God damn it, now I have to watch this.
Uncut.
This is going to be a trailer.
Uncensored and unbelievable.
Oh, man. Wow.
Can I get that tattooed on myself somewhere? Like, I want that to be the tagline for me as a person.
Next year, what is that little hatchet man?
Is it Hatchet Man? Yeah. I used to have, until my phone decided, like, LOL, you don't have any space. I would take pictures of Juggalos out in the wild and then just keep them because, like, it's so funny. Like, you see, like, the Hatchet Man, like, license plate or, like, the nice family that's, like, out trying to have a nice meal and, like, their son is, like, all Juggaloed out and their parents just have this look of disdain on their faces of, like, please be a fucking face. Please be a fucking face. Ugh.
I said I was done. However, we're still on Death Racers. The best part is Insane Clown Posse plays themselves because of their violent form of hip-hop was attributed to indirectly influencing multiple murders and acts of terrorism and a school massacre. This resulted in the rappers being convicted of these murders and being put in Death Racers.
Of course. They're playing themselves.
Yeah. So my review of Little Dead Rotting Hood, I don't have one. Just watch, watch the Asylum movies.
Fucking A, man. All right, Christ. Let's move along.
Oh God!
Is it? Are
what
you done?
Happening?
You have everything.
Yeah, I am.
Okay,
I am done.
You saved the best for last.
Oh my God!
I had no idea that was going to be a conversational piece. I just thought I would say it sucked. Moving on.
Let's jump into stream screams here.
Nate, wake up!
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
Don't fucking scream at me!
If you scream, I'll break your neck. Don't scream, miss. Don't scream.
And talk Peter Weller's first movie of unknown origin.
It haunts our cities. It's here. In this house. Now, it wants them. And before they knew it was happening, it had already begun. If it doesn't kill them, it will scare them to death. Of unknown origin.
Okay.
You sound so enthusiastic about talking about Peter Weller's first movie.
I don't know, man. I'm still on this. I know that this I know Asylum exists, and I know these movies exist, but every time I look at it, it's almost like I'm looking at it for the first time.
All right, so of
if the
unknown
asylum
origin,
made of unknown origin
would be
what would it be called?
Origin
Tricky
of
Rat.
The no, origin of the unknown. Tricky Rat.
It would be called
Tricky Rat.
Oh man, and you killed him.
So, here we go. Of unknown origin. Peter Weller's first film, 1983. George Cosmatos.
Cosmatos.
Apologize.
You can't read.
Is this considered Canucksploitation? Was this was filmed in Montreal?
I don't
Is
I
this
don't
on
know.
The Canucksploitation.com list?
It I'm not sure. I'd have to ask Paul.
Well, it should be, because it's filmed on location in Montreal, Quebec, subbing itself for New York City.
Hey, I would say that could be considered Canucksploitation.
I think so. Peter Weller plays a businessman. He's in the real estate or some shit? I don't know. But his wife and kid go out of town, and there's something in the house causing havoc.
It's a tricky rat, guys.
It's a rat.
Tricky rat.
And he basically goes to war with the rat while having a big project due.
Man, you're so wholly underselling this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying not to give any spoilers yet.
No. Okay. Of unknown origin, tricky rat. No, like, what's cool about this movie is that of unknown origin is you look at it on the outside of seeing, oh, it's a movie about a guy who faces off a rat. But, dude, this is like a psychological breakdown of a person.
Yes,
like, totally. You literally get to see – and, like, Peter Weller really does a great job of being, hey, I'm this nice family man because I am fucking married to Shannon Tweed. How cool is that? And,
oh,
you know, she goes away, and then what?
Hmm?
You talk about Shannon Tweed?
Oh, man, she's a fox. She's a stone cold fox.
Yeah, she flies hail.
And she's so good looking. It's ridiculous. So anyways, you know, and he slowly breaks down over something that's just so small,
mm-hmm.
but he can't control.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's a story of a psychological breakdown and also obsession, because he becomes obsessed with trying to catch this rat himself, most of all because he didn't just buy this home or rent it. he built this home basically and, you know, restored it all himself.
Right, yeah, he basically got it, yeah.
Yeah, this is his own, like, this is his house. This is definitely his territory. And the rat is coming in. And, you know, I think it's a really cool story because we get how obsessed he gets with trying to capture this rat. But at the same time, we're kind of getting this, like, you know, cat and mouse, but it was fucking tricky rats in the house, eat up shit. And then it's almost to the point, and there are some goofy points, but through the film, but I really like how the rat starts to just fuck with him.
Yeah, totally. Like, the rat knows what's up.
You know,
and I was thinking this was going to be some grotesque mutant rat or something like that.
But, no, that's the whole thing about it. It's a fucking rat.
It's just a rat.
You know,
the smartest rat in all of the land.
But that's the thing, is that rats, I mean, we obviously know anything about rats, and Peter Weller does in the movie because he starts looking that shit up. But rats will find a way to live. Life will find a way. So, like, you know, he...
Rats, rats. Will find a way.
Rats are tricky. They're a tricky son of a bitch. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's not that hard to believe that the rat, but other than getting in the bed with him, which I think is one of the funniest things ever. Because I was like, dude, that rat is totally trying to bite your dick, son. Totally trying to bite your dick. But I don't know. I think it's a really great film on a horror movie level, and then also kind of just kind of a psychological drama at the same time.
Well, that's what I love, how when you boil it down, simplistic it is. And once I realized, you know, where it was going with the psychological aspect of it, I settled in my chair and let it unfold in front of me, man. I love this flick. It's definitely operating on many levels for sure. BJ, your thoughts on Of Unknown Origin?
I really liked it because it felt very kind of back to the basics. It's very, the story itself is very Shakespearean, very Poe. It's very much, you know, this is an allegory for a father who, you know, could probably be taking better care of, you know, his job and his family and learning to appreciate the little things in life. But instead, he's fixating on things that aren't important. Like this tricky rat. So it's nice to see, you know, somebody's kind of, well, it's not nice to see somebody's descent into madness, but it's nice that it is over something so simple. Mm-hmm. I mean, you made the comment earlier about how it's not this giant mutated rat. I mean, it would have been very easy for this to have been like an Audrey 2 plant Little Shop style where it's just super nuts, but it's just fucking rat.
You know, we get a lot of close-ups of the rat, and, you know, I mean, there are a couple attacks, and, you know, you see the tail every once in a while, flip something, and you're like, Jesus Christ, it's huge. But, you know, I agree with you. Like, it very could easily be that horror film, but it steers clear of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we also have the temptation for, you know, Peter Weller's character to cheat, you know, and it's a very awkward sequence, like, where... You know, you have that in films, but it's usually already pre-existing or it's really sleazy and it's already happening. Like, we get the bond between the family and kind of the family is kind of strong. However, you know, he is more obsessed about his work than he is caring about maybe finishing it earlier and spending time with his family. But, you know, shit happens. You know, it's this fucking knock knock where his family goes away and the rat knocks on the door and wants to fuck him. You know, like,
are you sure? Because it was trying to bite his dick.
If Eli Roth wrote this, it'd be like, the rat is gonna fuck him. you know the end of Rats when, you know, the guy pulls off the mask and it's actually a rat. It's gonna be that girl. The rat would be a girl. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about, Roth? This is a Asylum movie. Let's go make it. Tricky rat. So, you know, and that's the one thing with George P. Cosmatos. He always, he did the same thing with Cobra, with Stallone, is that Cobra Stallone action movie, but if you look at Cobra and break it down, it's a fucking slasher movie. It's a horror film with Stallone chasing a fucking killer. It's played by Brian Thompson, who is a fucking creepy motherfucker to begin with. You know, and also, you know, Leviathan and stuff like that, where, you know, Leviathan's kind of a different level of deep sea creature horror film. You know, he really tries, he does these story arcs with characters and really gets in with you liking people. And then kind of the backdrop, we have, you know, the obstacle comes into play after we've already met people. You know, the movie's not focused around the rat. You know, in a good double feature of this is arachnophobia. But like in arachnophobia, the spiders are a big part of the film already. But reverse, we have Peter Weller, we get to know him. You know, the rat's kind of a nuisance to begin with. And the it's almost like the more the rat knows that it pisses him off, the more the rat does.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost like an interaction, which I think is fucking great. So anyways, it's definitely a must. I mean, it's always really stuck out there as, you know, as a horror film. It's not traditional at all.
Yeah.
It's very untraditional, but I think that's what really works for it. Because you talk about all these fucking rat movies, because, I mean, there's a fucking slew of killer rat movies. And this is the one.
I can't deal with rats. And that's why.
But this is one.
I am that target audience.
But this is what I'm saying. This is one thing that stands out completely from the rest, because, you know, it's just not about fucking rats gnawing on everything. You know, it's about Peter Weller's character, which is, you know,
it seems like this didn't make a lot of money during its theatrical run, because it was sold as a horror movie like Jaws or whatever, but it wasn't. So it seems like the marketing of the film kind of killed it.
Yeah. I mean, George P. Cosmatos had a really good run. I mean, even with Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Hell yeah.
He did, you know, which Rambo First Blood Part 2 is a really fucking kick-ass sequel. I mean, mostly because James Cameron wrote it. And he can write characters, but you also have George P. Cosmatos that can direct characters, which is pretty cool. You know, and of course he did Tombstone later on, which is his last film before he died.
Man, what a way to go out too, man.
I was like, it's a hell of a film though.
Do you know who his son is? Panos Cosmatos, who did Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Oh shit.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. So, let that settle in. Wow. With Beyond the Black Rainbow, watching Of Unknown Origin and Leviathan, it kind of sheds some light on Beyond the Black Rainbow, not with a storyline or story arc or anything, but kind of like
just the influences, I guess.
Right, yeah. Like I think Panos has said Of Unknown Origin is his favorite of his father's movies, which, you know, I don't know. I think out of all of George's films, I think Cobra is probably my favorite. But of Unknown Origin is a pretty damn close second.
And I think that's kind of unfortunate about Of Unknown Origin here for Voodoo is, man, to buy it, it's $17.99 for the HD.
Yeesh.
Which is crazy.
If you have the DVD, just the digital. On DVD, it is out of print.
Okay. Yeah. So you can rent it for $3.99, but which is what I did.
And, yeah,
it looked decent, but I was
if
like,
if you have the disc though, it is on the disc to digital program.
Oh, is it? I don't.
Yeah, I changed mine in, and then one of the people that follows me actually messaged me, I think, and was like, "Hey, man, like I know that you're doing the disc to digital. Can you want to sell it?" And I sold them for like, you know, $5 or something like that.
Nice, you're a good man. You didn't rip the dude off.
Yeah, well, you're a good American.
I do that to people that I don't know. If I know you, I usually always cut you a deal. If I don't know you, you're fucked.
Well,
tricky rat comes out and I
exactly.
Fuck.
So I have this on my wish list because I rented it, but I do want to own it at some point. And yeah,
I will tell you though, the HDX isn't all that much different from the DVD.
Okay,
it's not like it's not super fucking like ultra clear. It's stick with your DVD. It's fine.
Okay, Good to
know. Unless you don't own it, then, you know, by all means, get some better
quality.
Well,
you can buy the standard version for $9.99, but, you know, I'm like, well, you know. And if I ever want to watch it again, it's $3.99. You know, it's really not that big of a deal. It's there
for me. Yeah, yeah. It's always, hopefully it will always be there.
Hopefully. I mean, it would be cool to get a, you know, a re-release of this, because there is a on the DVD, there is a commentary with George Cosmatos.
Yeah.
And I think with Peter Weller.
Hey, if we get, you know, I think Warner Brothers owns it, so maybe we'll get, you know, Warner Brothers Blu-ray, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
That's what I'll start bugging Warner Archive about. Because they, hey, because of me, they released Ice Pirates. So
I'll make sure you go after Night School
before you go. Please.
Oh. Awesome. So, well, let's move along here. I'll have the Vudu link in the show notes if you guys want to rent it. But it's definitely worth checking out, people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Check it out.
The key.
Well, here we are at last. Right where we ought to be. Ready?
Oh, my God!
Moving on, it's 1995, I want to say.
Who picked this movie?
93.
Brad, did you pick it?
Dominion. Dominion. Not
did you not like Dominion?
In any relation to The Exorcist.
Did you not like it?
I did not like it at all.
Directed by Michael Cahill and starring Brad Johnson, Brian James, Tim Thomerson, and more people.
Dude, Brian James is great.
Brian James, right, that so one guy from the beginning of Blade Runner.
Okay.
No? This movie was wacky and goofy and, you know, I mean, if you're intoxicated, maybe there's some stuff to like here.
Do you like B-rated action movies from the 90s?
Do I like them?
Yeah.
For the most part, yeah. I don't know why I don't like this movie. I watched it and I was just like, I see what you're trying to do. I completely understand the aesthetic. I understand kind of the schlockiness to it. I get that I'm not supposed to take this serious. So it's not a matter of me not getting it. It just wasn't for me. I just found the character so insufferable, and I did not care at all. Like,
see, that's the thing is with a lot of these, like, you know, these movies from the 90s, like stuff with Gary Daniels and, you know, Thomas Ian Griffin and these just fucking, you know, China O'Brien series, but Cynthia Rothrock movies. They're all very basic and kind of silly, but some of them stick out more than others. And this always stuck out a little bit more than some of the normal direct-to-video action films is because Brian James in it and he plays a fucking killer.
I think that was the only thing that kind of kept me through was Brian James. And I kind of like Tim Thomerson. So, you know, those two guys, I was like, all right, well, we'll see where this goes with these guys.
I think they were going for it. I think they were, committed, and they were really delivering some pretty good performances. In it like that for sure, but just the actual story itself. And I'm also very kind of hesitant with like people who are like hiding out in the woods and that seem kind of functional, but at the same time are not. I've never really gotten into that sort of subgenre, really.
See, that's another one of my favorite things, is that you can take any movie and set it in the woods, and I automatically have a boner.
Yeah, I don't.
The plot for this film is basically these guys, they get together every year for a hunting trip, right? And there's a crazy guy out in the woods.
Well, there's a certain
killing
section.
Everyone.
Certain section that they're not really supposed to go, and you know, there's been, I guess, evidence of hitchhikers, people missing, and so, but they get to go to this one area, and that's when they come across a man who has a dark past, who is killing hunters that come into his territory.
The hunters become the hunted in Dominion.
How's that? Are you trying like this old school like grindhouse trailer voice or something?
Yeah, is it good?
Did you fail?
Yes, I get.
No,
1995. Nah.
Jesus Christ!
I think he's
Michael
Cahill. Masking his reading comprehension skills. I'm just kidding. No, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I immediately dislike most movies surrounded by hunting trips. If it's set up as like, oh, if we're going on a hunting trip, I you've lost me. I don't care. I hope that a deer spears you. I don't care about you at all.
Brad, have you ever been on a hunting trip?
No, I'm against.
And it was miserable, and I hated every second of it.
I'm against. I'm against, not against hunting. If you hunt, I'm not like offended. I could never bring myself to kill anything.
Like I completely understand the whole like
I eat meat. I'm glad that you hunt. You know,
bloody, bloody, blah. I get that, but the culture surrounding it, it just I have no. Like it just makes it. I think I get like a knee-jerk response to it because all of the shittiest people I've ever met are the people that like wear like hot pink and camo in public.
I'm well,
like,
yeah, the people that kind of flaunt that they're hunters, you know, yeah. At your local Walmart. Those are the people
hunting,
you want to avoid.
Hunting for sport, I can't get behind. If you're hunting for food, you know,
or for like nuisance control, I completely understand. But, whatever. But yeah,
well, I mean,
so
we're getting political.
Yeah, here we go.
That's kind of why I'm saying whatever, because I knew that's where we were heading into. But in terms of Dominion, because of I think you know what? I think I just tapped into why I dislike this movie so much is because from the get-go, those are two characters that I could care less about because I don't value them because. Like, all right, time to go into the woods and kill some stuff. Oh, we're not supposed to really be in this area, but fuck it. We're going to do it anyway. You deserve everything coming to you. I hope he wears your skin.
Well, you know what? Since we're on the asylum debate, I've never left. This is the asylum of, you know, Most Dangerous Game.
Yep. Which,
actually, no. Most Dangerous Game was first. Then they made Surviving the Game, mm-hmm. And this is the asylum knockoff of Surviving the Game.
Yeah.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No, I mean stuff like, you know, because I always fucking love Surviving the Game. I think that's definitely one of the best.
It's one of the Ice-T, right?
Yeah, Ice-T, F. Murray Abraham. But that's one of those, you know, that's one of those films I truly still to this day, like, action movies from the 90s, fucking Surviving the Game and Judgment Night. Those two movies are fucking great.
And infinitely better than 1995's Dominion.
Yes. They are better, of course. But, I don't know, in tradition of Surviving the Game, did you ever watch that movie Death Ring that I told you about?
Yes. Death Ring is better than Dominion.
Yeah. Oh my God, stop it.
Say something's better than Dominion again.
Skin Trade is better than Dominion.
Skin Trade? The fucking Dolph Lundgren?
I'm just looking up on my stack of DVDs here. I'm just like, just throwing out names now.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I don't know. With tradition of that kind of the hunters being the hunted, I've always really enjoyed that aspect. And when you throw some goofy 90s movie with it and over the top characters and, you know, people overacting the whole time because they're really trying to do a good job, but you know, it's just not a very good movie put together. I don't know. I think this is one of those movies. It's a lot of fun and always deserved a sequel. That ending of the movie is fucking cool as shit. You guys didn't watch it till the end.
It's all right.
You
guys didn't watch it.
I don't know if this.
I sure didn't. I won't lie. I didn't.
I may or may not have fallen asleep.
I got to about minute 55, and I was like, "And I said, fuck that's it."
I think I fell asleep. I woke up, and then I was like, "Shit, I can't finish this thing."
My rule is always 30 minutes. Is like if you cannot grab my attention after 30 minutes, then I don't feel bad for tuning out. And I got to 55 minutes, and I was like, all right, yep. beautiful, what are you going to do to me? Whatever the fuck, while you're sitting. Like, what was the framing of that scene where he's like, he's like not in a box cage. I don't know what even to call it. And the other dude's just like sitting at his desk, and all you see is like his floating head just pleading with him. I'm like, what? I don't know what I'm supposed to be looking at right now. And no, I don't. Do not like. Do not want. I get why you like it. I'm not you.
Failed. I failed. And you failed.
But hey, watch this for Brian James and Tim Thomerson.
Brian James.
And watch it for the incredible ending.
That way to
you stall, bitch. You say that. You say that now.
Mm-hmm.
Is the ending really worth it? Because if so, I'll go back and watch it. Because I will end up finishing it because I don't.
You know what happened to me? I was trying to stream it because I got a copy, and I was trying to stream it to my TV, and it kept freezing on me. So this movie, the first hour, how long is this movie? Hour and 20 minutes?
It's like something like that, yeah.
Hour and a half? The first hour took 2 hours because it kept stalling on me.
Oh, jeez.
So I ended up falling asleep.
But, I'll finish it. I will finish it because that's just the person that I am, but...
I built up the ending too much now. So wow.
So I'm just going to come back next week and be like, what's the ending of Dominion? I still hate it.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, I posted the picture of this movie in the Facebook group, Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, and they all freaked out and loved it. So there is love for this film out there. And
because it's just pure fucking cheese.
Yes, it's machismo cheese.
You have a goofy villain. You don't have, you don't care about any of the characters because there's not enough relationship building. I mean, the whole thing about kind of outdoor stuff is team building, relationship building, and they don't do any of that.
They sit around the campfire and they say, "Isn't this great, guys? This is what it's all about, guys. Just sitting here." We don't have to hunt. Just this is what it's about.
Oh, God, kill me. Kill me now.
Awesome.
Man.
This can be found in the shady parts of the internet. It's not on YouTube. So if you know where to find stuff, you can find Dominion, 1995's Dominion.
You can buy it on VHS for like $20, Sean.
Yeah, who's spending $20 on a VHS tape?
Me.
Okay.
Not this one, thank God.
But I mean, why would I spend $20 on a VHS tape that I haven't seen? If I found this at like a Goodwill or thrift store for
would
a few
you
bucks,
buy Enemy Territory for $20 on VHS?
On DVD?
You're a piece of shit.
I don't have a VHS player. It broke. So I'm stuck.
Well,
I'm stuck.
You need to get yourself
to the digital
a combo player.
I did, and it broke. I think one of my kids put something into it. Killing it. Gave him something.
That way you have to give him treats when he goes to the toilet. You didn't put a VCR this time, buddy.
No, this is a training thing. We got to get him excited about pooping in the toilet because pooping in the pants, no bueno.
That's true.
All right, I think we can move along, guys. Next week, Brad and I got a chance to talk to John Michael Thor, so you will be hearing that interview. Pretty excited about it. He's a fantastic guy. Loved talking to him. We're going to be kicking off Heavy Metal Horror Month, so we'll be, of course, talking to Thor. We will also be discussing Maximum Overdrive and Hack-O-Lantern. So we want to start letting you guys know what we're going to be covering because a lot of people they've hit us up online and everything. They want to prepare for the show. So we'll start kind of teasing the next episode at the end of, at the end of each week. So get ready for that. It's going to be a really fun month. I'm really looking forward to it. I have my stack of heavy metal horror set aside. Brad has done some research and found some fantastic things for the VHS. Oh my God. Segment. And We're working on the stream screams for that one. It's a bit tougher, but it's gonna be a good time. So we also have some treats on the website. A lot of our writers are working, and we may have some guest writers that we're working on. So of course, be checking back with thescreamcast.com for all that. Josh Obershaw has been working overtime, been kicking ass and taking names on that site. We really appreciate all the work that he's done with the new stuff. Like I said, I have a link to the jog thing. I would love to hear what you guys' favorite horror movies are. Please click the reply. Don't be too cool to do it. I've had some people on Facebook tonight saying, "Oh, I just posted my favorites on the comments, so why would I reply?" I'm just, you know, it's like, don't be too cool. Let's have some fun.
Hey, some people don't want to be videotaped, Sean. They don't feel comfortable.
We want to hear your silky, sultry voices on our podcast.
Jesus.
Anyway.
I'm definitely not going to do it now.
Moving along, please check out our sponsors. Go to coffeeshopofhorrors.com. Check out their coffee. Use the code SCREAMCAST. When you place an order, you will get 10% off your order. I was having the Highlander Grog tonight. It's kind of my go-to when we do the podcast lately. I love it. And we are going to be in the month of February, we will be doing a drawing. We'll do something to do with heavy metal horror. We'll have to figure something out. So we'll have that kind of thing for you to write in a story about heavy metal horror. We'll let you know probably next week. But also, if you buy something from Coffee Shop of Horrors, or if you buy something from grindhousevideo.com, email us at readme@thescreamcast.com. Email us the transaction. You will get put into the fucking fedora for the drawing.
I am buying you a new goddamn hat.
Well, I got some stupid regular baseball hats, but I mean,
use the stupid regular baseball hat.
All right, fine. So go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors and please give them your love. Of course, check out Wolfmen of Mars, all their music, and check out Kevin Spencer's art at inkspatters.net. Buy some prints from him and give him some hot, sweaty love. He could use it. That's going to do it for this week's show. We'll talk to all of you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.